The Purpose Podcast, a podcast series brought to you by Social Business Trust to celebrate the 10-year anniversary. The podcast will explore social impact, corporate purpose, and social innovation. We'll be bringing together diverse voices and perspectives from in and around Social Business Trust's network to look at the importance of the social sector in an ever-changing world. We'll also show how working in partnership with businesses and volunteers helps social enterprises and charities grow and deliver life-changing impact. Thanks goes to our corporate partners for their ongoing support. Bain, Charles Russell Speechleys, Clifford Chance, EY, Permira, Permira Debt Managers, Refinitiv, Schroders, and Thomson Reuters.
For this episode, I'm handing over to our guest host, Simon Milton, founder of Pulse Brands and SBT Trustee.
Well, welcome to the fifth podcast on purpose from the Social Business Trust, addressing the challenges that we face as a society. Well, today we're actually going to look at the role of corporate purpose, how commercial businesses are delivering so much more than shareholder return. We have a fantastic panel of speakers, and I want to first of all introduce Lucinda Case, Managing Director of Thomson Reuters. We have Simon Ritpath, Managing Partner of Charles Russell Speechleys. And finally, we have Dave Dunkley, who is the CEO of Grant Thornton. Welcome.
What sort of inspires our people at Thomson Reuters, again, on the legal side, is really helping lawyers do their job better, helping them solve their clients' needs. And that's, as I said before, whether that's private individuals or corporations, and really trying to make the justice system more efficient and provide access to justice ultimately to more people.
It is an opportunity here. It's an opportunity for our business. It's an opportunity for our clients. It's an opportunity for our society to effectively perhaps repurpose, if you like, what is critical to each of us and our organisations and our clients.
That concept of doing the right thing is we'll do the right thing by our people, and that will give our current people a different experience of working with a firm, but it also means we'll open up to a different set of talent perhaps than we have before.
I'm just going to do a little scene setting for this extraordinary world that we are living in, and we are all starting to become kind of more, I'm not sure comfortable, but understanding some of the huge pressures we are now under as a consequence of COVID and probably the largest economic collapse of the global economy that we've ever known. We're also living in an extraordinary time of change and transformation around the climate change space. The likes of Mark Carney, John Kerry, or Prince Charles, this extraordinary shift from the investment world, from policy world, government, and from business, where the pressures on business to think about the way they are acting and what they are doing impacting on the world. You could argue that the whole world of shareholder primacy and the free market economics that's driven our economy over the last 50, 60 years is now either bust or truly being challenged. And we're living in extraordinarily exciting times in many ways, but in many ways also very, very daunting. I think something like 1,000 companies are now signed up to the task force on climate-related financial disclosures on voluntary standards. I mean, extraordinary change over the last few years. So, but before we dive into this notion and the challenges of the purpose of business, I was really keen to reach out to the three of you to start at the more human personal level, because fundamentally, the things that we are wanting our organizations to do, you know, we have to be willing to go there ourselves. And therefore, I want to start with you, Lucinda, and to Dave and Simon, and ask the question around, you know, what does purpose mean to you? Even if that goes back to, you know, your formative days of university and why you became a lawyer, Lucinda, and kind of in a way how you ended up in the world of Thomson Reuters. And just share with me kind of what does purpose mean to you?
Thank you, Simon. So to me, purpose is the why we do what we do. So, you know, taking Thomson Reuters, we're a global provider of news and information for professionals. And what's our purpose in all of that? We really see our purpose strengthening the foundation of society with information, expertise, and insights that people can trust. And a big part of our business is supporting the legal business, legal professionals. And I started life as a lawyer. You know, and you think, why did I do that? I did that because I love solving problems. I love getting different sets of facts and sifting through them and working out what the answer is. So that's sort of what took me into law. And now I said my business is really about supporting lawyers and make sure they can do a great job for their clients, whether that's private citizens or corporations.
Thank you, Lucinda, and to Simon too. And even if there's a sort of maybe sometimes even a disconnect between your own personal purpose and your own organization, but love to hear, you know, at that very human level, kind of what gets you out of bed in the morning.
Thank you, Simon, and I would echo elements of what Lucinda has already said. I think if you drill all the way down to the personal purpose and what does purpose mean to me, it's and why did I get into law and end up in the role that I've had, it's a question of making a difference, I think. So the why, what is it that I can do that will genuinely make a difference, that will influence the environment and society around me? And I think from my perspective, that's my personal purpose. It's making a difference, and that can sound a little bit trite, but if you use it in the broadest possible context, that's making decisions, it's solving problems. When it was client-facing work, it's going through the daily challenges of being given a different set of problems and understanding the outcomes that you and the client want to achieve and your role in all of that, which is, yes, to be a lawyer and provide legal advice at one level, but it's also to achieve an outcome and to make a situation or a problem either go away or improve. So it's that sense of making a difference, making an improvement.
Thank you, Simon, for that. And lastly, to Dave, again, same question, you know, really, you know, that sense of, you know, what makes you tick?
Why did I start being an accountant? Frankly, I stumbled into accountancy as a PE graduate. There was no great wider purpose or vision at that stage. I think more recently, what is really important, I think it is more similar then in terms of legacy, and that's hard to define, but we've all got an opportunity to use Simon's phrase, and it's a brilliant one, is make a difference. But particularly with now CEO of an organization, you could get into a treadmill of turning out profits every year, but every 1st of January the counter gets reset, and you're not actually building something, but so building something of much greater value, leaving it behind in a better state, making a difference to people in the business and the people you impact. And then I'd mirror that in terms of personal life, in terms of it making a difference to the family, really setting a platform for children to thrive in their future life. So it's that building something beyond the here and now and legacy, I think, is the very essence of it for me.
That's great. And thank you, the three of you, for that. I think it's really extraordinary that we're talking about purpose in the way we are. And I guess there's something for me around, have we always had these conversations? Is the notion of purpose something that has evolved over the last 3-5 years due to the sort of the challenges the world is facing? Or is it sort of deeper down that sits within every organization? I'm going to go to Lucinda again to sort of step into the real world of Thomson Reuters and what you do. I mean, it's a very old historical organization that has built an extraordinary reputation for delivering products and services to your customers. But sort of step into that sense of purpose of Thomson Reuters, and has there been a shift over the last few years?
I guess I'd like to talk about the legal piece, and I think the purpose piece to me is, you know, what we're trying to do ultimately is make legal professionals more efficient and able to deliver a better service to their clients. And if you think about that, the sort of the net result of that should be ultimately improved access to justice and a better functioning legal system, a more efficient legal system. And I think what's, you know, worries us And I'm sure Simon shares this as well, is that you look at the impact of the pandemic on what it's done to the judicial system. It has just, the system, you know, has almost crawled, you know, stalled, not crawled, stalled. And I'm sure we all listen to radio stories about, you know, the fact that criminal justice, particularly in the UK, you know, I think there was a 25,000 case backlog. It's now more than 50,000 cases in backlog. So that means people who are accused of a crime or are the victim of a crime are not going to see justice for a couple of years, which is terrifying. So ultimately, I see what we're doing as really, you know, that to me is the justice not failing ultimately. And that is the last thing that I want to see from. So I'm just hoping that our business can have an influence that said in, let's bring more efficiency into the system. We've worked with the civil courts on case management systems, more digitization, etc. And it's clear that's got to come into the criminal system as well, to me. So I think that's what really actually now inspires my team much more. We can see where things are falling and failing and really re-engaging people. Okay, well, what's our response to that? How can we actually ultimately help fix that?
Okay, I'm going to move on to Simon and Charles Russell Speechley's world of law. And, you know, from my perspective of the world, the sort of legal framework, the regulatory side, you know, some of the challenges the world faces right now just seems to be extraordinary. And I'm not just talking about the Paris Agreement and putting plans into place, but, you know, going to some of the broader notions of the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals and some of the levels of inequality that is, you know, been accentuated by this COVID. And we'd just love to listen and step into the legal world that you operate in and the client that you are advising to talk around this notion of purpose.
Yes, Simon. I mean, it is a hugely complex area, but I think we best support our commercial clients by listening to them, first of all, and understanding their ESG priorities. So, of course, there are treaties and regulations that have a legal context and effect, but obviously they need to find their own purpose. They need to think long term and pursue sustainable solutions. So that can include working with our clients to incorporate carbon reduction and other environmental commitments into their supply contracts and supply chains, helping them to reduce their indirect emissions, for example. But also working with clients to design and implement robust due diligence processes to identify and address the risks of modern slavery in supply chains. So it's thinking more laterally in that context. But I think for most of our commercial clients, business and individuals, access to justice is generally not an issue because, I mean, sadly, access to justice, at least in the UK, is heavily dependent upon means. So one of the things we've sought to do as an organisation is to have a relevant and impactful pro bono programme. So for our pro bono clients, it's a very different story. Their access to justice is the overwhelming challenge and getting access to the support they need. So as part of our responsibility, if you like, as a law firm, it's to help people who are no longer able to get legal aid and who can't afford to pay for a lawyer. And we run events such as a weekly pro bono advice clinic, which we has been sustained throughout the COVID pandemic by utilising webcams, which actually increases our reach to other parts of the country where perhaps local support is harder to find. But we can help people with employment or family issues, and we support people living with disabilities to challenge unfair decisions about their welfare benefits. And we try and embed this in our culture by encouraging all of our lawyers, whatever their practice area or seniority, to do pro bono work. And we incentivize that by giving credit for pro bono hours when making decisions about remuneration, for example.
That, Simon, thank you for that. I wasn't aware of that. And that's very powerful listening to you talk, because what I'm hearing or sensing is that sense that, you know, this notion of, you know, who we are in service to. Of course, we are in service to our clients, but there is the broader, wider society there, Simon, that you seem to be incredibly passionate about. My question, just to follow on from that, is how much does allowing your lawyers to step into that world, you know, what does it mean to them, both at the personal level and from a perspective of, you know, the value they can bring to their commercially paying clients?
I think it's critically important. And I could sit here and say that we were pioneering and we chose to do this because it's the right thing to do, which of course it is. But actually, it's driven by a demand. Our people want to give back. They want to be involved. It's a recruitment tool. It's a necessary part of being a well-rounded, well-run, supportive environment and a successful law firm. So it is something, having listened to our people, that they really want the ability to do. And what we've tried to do is put in place a framework and a structure to run that pro bono program so that there is a structure to ensure that that work can be delivered on a consistent basis for the right people and to have the right reach.
Well, I feel inspired listening to you. I don't know how your the other partners and people who work for you feel. I'm going to move on to Dave and the world of Grant Thornton. Again, you know, I'm certainly no expert, but I'm very aware that, you know, for me, one of the biggest things around some of the big goals that we're facing is, you know, in a way, if you can't measure these things, it's very hard to sort of start shifting the dial. I mean, you talk about the fact that, you know, we are globally off pace around climate. Many talk about the fact that when we're investing in businesses, we're not, you know, we understand our financial return, but the impact on some of these externalities now becoming more and more important are just not there. So really interested in the world of Grant Thornton in this huge transformation that we seem to be seeing in the business world.
It's a fascinating time, and the way and the word sustainability is used a lot in our business and a lot in the business of our clients, and it means lots of things to lots of different people. And the sort of encourage as we give advice to think holistically to our clients and really understand the holistic nature of their business. So if businesses really want to be self-aware of their position in society, then look holistically, not just at their carbon footprint and their impact on the climate, but also what suppliers do they use, and beyond that, particularly when you get into accountancy, how do they treat their taxes? So all of those things together to get a real holistic view of the business. But you're absolutely right. There's that well-trodden phrase of what gets measured gets managed. And as a profession, we've built up a huge amount of expertise in presenting financial data for various stakeholders. And as you alluded to in this conversation with Simon, there's a much broader purpose to that with a small p in terms of public interest, because what the financial information you prepare has got to be trusted. And we're going into a new area where there isn't that quality of data for stakeholders to really judge. And I think we've got a real, as an industry and as a firm in that industry, we've got a real role to play. So the way we look at that is prioritize with a business where they need to focus, and then pick the correct measurements, because there is almost an infinite number of KPIs or key performance indicators you could choose. If you choose the wrong one, you're not going to make the impact that you'll decide to do. So agree what measures, get the right metrics, and then we can really add value to people who use the information which we report on, is get trust and confidence in that underlying data and give some assurance that where people are talking about their broader footprint, actually it's built on a decent data set, and it's got some third-party assurance around it. And that's what we've done for a long time in terms of financial data. And ultimately, these two things will coincide, because purpose on itself is laudable, but profit and purpose have got to go hand in hand in this, in terms of we're talking about profitable organizations which need to remain profitable, but to be back to that word, truly sustainable, they've got to do it in a purposeful way. So I think it's a really interesting stage of how we develop as accountants in this ecosystem to develop a much broader reporting framework.
Dave, that's great. And I just want to keep with you within Grant Thornton, because again, for me, it's been clear that this measurement piece has been sort of screaming out for a long time. But you know, we are, what's clear is that we're all operating in a system. You know, we need policy, we need legislation, you know, we need changes in consumer behavior, we need capital to be flowing in the right places. I guess for me is that really interesting space of what are you seeing out there in the corporate world that is shifting, that's in a way kind of enabling you to sort of step into your sweet spot. And I guess, you know, use the skills that you have embedded in your organization to its best.
Well, it's that holistic piece, that the format we are as a business, we are auditors. That's not all of our business. Mostly we are advisors. So in terms of advising on their broader footprint and how people do business to make it generally sustainable. And then narrowing down on that measurement piece of the auditors is we do have a huge expertise in analyzing data and getting to the nub of the key performance indicators in the business to bring those to the fore and start measuring them. And it's as the data sets build up and comparability across business, analysts have been comparing financial data for an awful long time. What we can be as part of that ecosystem is build that data set with assurance around it so people can look at businesses and really test their authenticity in this space to say, are they delivering on the bold statements they make? And it's that trust and integrity that we can really help support, which ultimately needs to make a difference.
That's really great. Thank you for that. Listen, I wanted to get back into your world of Thomson Reuters and the legal side and just kind of explore the shift at a cultural level. What ignites the hundreds, thousands, I guess, across the world of Thomson Reuters when they are thinking about their role and supporting this huge, vast, incredibly important legal structure that exists. I think number 16 of the Sustainable Development Goal is the critical notion of the rule of law. And I am not a lawyer, but being able to enable lawyers to do their job feels quite important at this moment in time.
We've been involved very much with our trust law organisation and convening groups of legal professionals to talk about what international collaboration we can bring together to really get that development goal into the corporate DNA. But in terms of how we work with the legal industry, and I said to me, I think what sort of inspires our people at Thomson Reuters, again on the legal side, is really helping lawyers do their job better, helping them solve their clients' needs. And that's, as I said before, whether that's private individuals or corporations, and really trying to make the justice system more efficient and provide access to justice ultimately to more people. I think that's really what inspires and ignites our people, is that how can we make the justice system better? I think the pandemic, the UN has published figures about the impact of the pandemic on access to justice. And I've got, the UN has reported that the pandemic is having an unprecedented effect on the functioning of judicial systems globally. Courts closing, their operations very much been disrupted. The chance for many to secure a fair or timely hearing is worse than ever, and case backlogs just continuing to increase. So as I said, we're really working with lawyers, whether it's in the public sector or the private sector, to say, well, how actually can we improve and bring efficiency, digitization into the court system? So that's very exciting, quite honestly, to think that ultimately we could improve access to justice.
One question for Simon and Dave, just before we step into the social enterprise space and the social business trust. I guess what I'm really interested, starting with Simon, is, you know, how do you see, you know, the world ahead? I mean, do you see it as a place of extraordinary opportunity and excitement, or is it, you know, you're running a large organization? Is it sort of, my gosh, this is overwhelming?
Well, I mean, I think it's very easy, Simon, to sit there and be shocked by it, because it's, there's certainly no rule book for this current situation. You can't lean on the experience of others who've been through something like this before. But what I would say is that's a great leveler, because everyone, all of our clients are in the same space. Everyone is looking for leadership, guidance, purpose, something to unify around. So I think the first point I would make is that it is an opportunity here. It's an opportunity for our business. It's an opportunity for our clients. It's an opportunity for our society to effectively perhaps repurpose, if you like, what is critical to each of us and our organisations and our clients. And I think whilst obviously I worry about our people, I worry about our clients' businesses and their affairs, and yes, there's an element of pining for an end of the current crisis, but I do see it as one of opportunity. I think it's an opportunity for us to restate our purpose, be even more clear about what is important to us as a business, and to ask the same question of our clients. And I'm confident that actually, if we do that in the right fashion and we do it in a calm and measured way and utilize the skills that our people bring to that, then it will present opportunities. If nothing else, there are lots of problems out there, and lawyers love problems. Yeah, I do see it as a time for opportunity.
Thank you for that, inspiring again. And to Dave, so how does Grant Thornton see the next decade?
That we've wrestled with the concept of purpose, and the word which comes out all the time for us is authenticity. So I think having too grand a purpose, we weren't comfortable with in the past necessarily in terms of translating to day-to-day activity. And we've taken the opportunity where we've been locked down to make sure we have a much more positive dialogue in the business around the sort of firm we want to be. And what's bubbled up internally is a concept of just being known and being comfortable with doing the right thing ahead of where it's easy, and having that as a foundation for lots of decisions we make. And what we want to do and starting to do is use that as a cornerstone for projecting forward to how we want to be. So instead of talking about back to normal, let's project forward to something different. And that concept of doing the right thing is we'll do the right thing by our people, and that will give our current people a different experience of working with a firm. But it also means we'll open up to a different set of talent perhaps than we had before, not being slaves to a 9-to-5 environment, and lots more people can come into our business and get access to our world to make it more sustainable than perhaps they couldn't. And we'll do the right thing by our clients too and respond to them. But we've actually got a bigger opportunity to do the right things by the communities we serve. And when I say communities, that includes the financial ecosystem and the people who look at our business. So I think if we use this now as an opportunity to really look at our firm and therefore influence the industry, we really can make ourselves generally more sustainable for the future. So we are there in 5-10 years time, underpinning financial reporting, underpinning advice and growth in the economy, but we're doing it in a way which really is true to our purpose there of doing the right thing, and therefore we are contributing to that greater cause.
I really like that, by the way. It's very easy to get caught up in big statements, you know, grandiose, and fine to a certain level. But bottom line is that, you know, we still have to get on and do the day job and deliver.
I think that's right, Simon. And we've had a little bit of a conversation internally in terms of have you landed on something which isn't a purpose at all that describes your culture? And frankly, we've taken the view for now that doesn't matter. What is really important is that we're authentic and we are true to it.
Well, I think that's very inspiring, and particularly for the people, you know, who fundamentally have to do the job. You know, I know you employ thousands of people, and you know, the closer you get to that voice of real people doing real things, it, for me, will create the change. Going to Lucinda. So I guess my question is around, you know, how is Thomson Reuters learning from this 10-year experience with the Social Business Trust in terms of your own organisation?
Thank you, Simon. So as you say, we've been involved with the Social Business Trust for 10 years. And I think last year was the year we really saw the relationship blossom to, you know, to its fullest extent, or hopefully we can develop it even further. But what we did last year is, because we do see the relationship, as you say, as providing access for our people to incredibly entrepreneurial organisations and individuals. And people are now more and more enthusiastic about getting involved with opportunities because of exactly that. And we have an internal, what we call talent marketplace, which is where we advertise normally internal opportunities for people to be involved in innovation projects. And so they can stretch themselves, try something a bit different. And we now put social business trust opportunities onto that talent marketplace because we do see them as just an extraordinary way for people to develop themselves. And to me, it's not only about people learning to stretch, well, having an opportunity to stretch themselves, learn new skills, but they also all feel so good about what they're doing. Their sense of value has been reinforced hugely. So through a very difficult year last year where we had people, you know, quite low at times because their customers were struggling and we were seeing some of our customers not making it through the pandemic. So people were suffering, I think, from our side. And having that social business trust outlet, an opportunity, was really lifted a lot of people last year.
Thank you, Lucinda. I spend a lot of my time, you know, working with leaders on supporting them through driving cultural change. But I think one of the things that often gets forgotten is actually people at the top. Or running large organizations. I guess my final question to you, Lucinda, is how has your relationship with the Social Business Trust helped you?
So personally, I've met some great individuals, but yeah, I got involved with SBT to begin with just as a mentoring, you know, as a mentor, actually, when I was working in the US, but in getting involved with one of the social enterprises. And now I have the opportunity to be part of the investment committee. So for me personally, it started with, you know, a direct support to one of the social enterprises, but it's become something, and I said it's a huge privilege for me to be the person that is sort of the glue between SBT and our great people at TR and helping match the people up to the opportunities.
Thank you. And to Simon, I mean, Charles Russell Speechley is a partner of the Social Business Trust, and it's fantastic having you on board. I wanted to ask sort of at a personal level, whether there's been any of your own personal experience, either with the Social Business Trust or with the pro bono work, that's actually helped you as a leader to keep your batteries charged through these very difficult times.
What has been great is to be able to reflect on the successes the pro bono program has brought to the firm over the last 12 months. So I think it's particularly the partnership with SBT, it's helped. It's probably got three real benefits for us as a firm. First of all, it's helping genuinely good causes. So these are good enterprises, these are good social businesses that we're able to get involved in and work with. Secondly, it's one of those things where you actually improve your lawyers by giving them access and exposure to the SBT cohort of charities, because it asks them to do what they do day in, day out, and apply that to a different type of client or a different organization with a slightly different requirement. So it gives perspective and makes them better lawyers. And thirdly, it gives a great sense of satisfaction. They're the stories that have come back to me personally, people saying how great it is that they're given this exposure, how they feel better doing something that's having a direct social impact on something in their community or around them, or someone who really needed that help. And so being a people business and retaining key talent is in part keeping them happy. And if you can keep them happy through improving their skill set and helping a very, very worthy cause, then it just lifts the mood.
That's great. And finally, last question today, what keeps your batteries charged? Leading a large organization in a world that can feel slightly daunting, at the same time very exciting.
Keeping the batteries, it's not always easy, is it? And back to the very essence of purpose, making a difference and building a legacy. One of the things I really love hearing is just the inspiring stories for our people where they do get involved. And one of my great passions is, as part of that legacy, is to make Grant Thornton even more inclusive than it is today, building and increase the level of opportunities. And the stories I've heard, in particular of the work we've done with refugees, for example, to give people who are really struggling a fantastic opportunity, is wonderful in itself. But when I think actually, this isn't just benevolence, because we are bringing some fantastic diverse talent into our business to make it even more inclusive, which then will even attract even more people. And our people are having a great experience doing it. You think, now we're starting to make a difference, and this is really starting to count.
Well, I'd like to thank Lucinda, Simon and Dave for their fantastic insights. What is so clear to me is that the world of social enterprises and scaling their business models, you know, is hugely challenging, but some of those challenges are also those faced by the corporate world. And here we are now in an extraordinary moment in time dealing with the shadow of the pandemic. You know, we're seeing huge levels of, or greater levels of inequality that we need to go after both as social enterprises and as commercial entities. And when I listen to the three of you speak, it just gives me huge pride and hope for what we can all collectively build.
The Purpose Podcast.